Welcome to Vitality Made Simple. The following production is for educational and entertainment purposes only. If you need medical advice, call your doctor. Now, let's go to Vitality Made Simple.
Welcome to Vitality Made Simple. This is the podcast that equips you to feel better, look better, and to enjoy better relationships. You know, life is all about relationships, and it's so nice to have the president and founder of Access Genetics, Dr. Ronald McGlennon. He is an MD, and you're going to be pretty surprised at some of his insights. He's really been a trailblazer in the area of salivary diagnostics. Welcome, Ron. Great to have you.
It's lovely to be with you this afternoon, Debbie.
Well, you know, you are the first person in this space. You are, in my mind, totally a guru, because when I learned about your test in 2010, which is, I think, the year it came out, it totally transformed my dental practice. And, you know, you're an MD, and I know that you're an associate professor at the University of Minnesota and in pathology, but it's so rare to see a physician who really wants to talk about oral bacteria. How did this happen?
I think it was accidental that I landed on our interest in oral hygiene and where we could go in terms of the capabilities of the laboratory. But let me just start by saying to your audience, and even as a reminder to you, I am a physician, yes, but I'm a pathologist specifically. So my specialty is what the laboratory can bring to clinical practice. And from the beginning of my career, I have been focused on kind of two things. First of all, I was fortunate enough in my career to get on the ground floor of molecular genetics. So the word molecular and genetics has a lot of emotion to it, but candidly, it means that we can do a lot with a little. And so the idea of using powerful laboratory techniques off of a sample that is as convenient as is saliva, or more specifically, the oral rinse, means that we can start to interrogate the body from top to bottom from this very convenient sample. So that's kind of been my sort of focus in both my research career before I started Access Genetics. Second part of it is important and sort of coming to fruition today, and that is, if I can do in a big central laboratory today, if I can bring that down to a form factor that works at chair side, that quite frankly is the direction we're going, both as a laboratory company and frankly as an entrepreneurial endeavor. So let's talk about the oral cavity. You know, I'm a student of history, and the Greeks always thought that the liver was the soul, you know, a manifestation of the soul. One could apply a similar metaphor to looking into the mouth and imagine that through this organ, through this orifice, we have access to all of the organs in the body. And so then, along with our mission to bring the discipline, the precepts of quality laboratory medicine to the practice of dentistry, that was our underlying mission. Then we said, okay, well, what can we do with the uniqueness of the mouth? And here we are today in 2024, where I can say that of the nearly 100 most commonly ordered tests for the care of patients, about 75% of them can be in some way measured from a collection of saliva. Now, don't call me up today and say, you know, I want this test and that test, because they're not already validated and ready to go. But let me just give you some imagery here. As blood circulates through our body at the moment, it carries with us nutrition and other vital proteins and biomarkers collectively that reflect all aspects of human health. Saliva is what is referred to as a transudate of blood. So what flows through the mouth and what flows out of our salivary glands is a reflection of what's going on in the blood. So what's present in blood, That is the proteins and nutrients and vitamins and all vital things that make health and quite frankly, disease are reflected in saliva. But the caveat is that the levels of those biomarkers are typically much, much lower. So the job that has remained for me and for others in my profession is to find laboratory methods and techniques that allow for us to measure those things in saliva with the same reliability and sensitivity and hence predictive value. So that's the journey we're on right now, is we're starting to add more and more things to our repertoire of patient care tests that are measured in saliva. Simply put, you know, the bus stop conversation on this, saliva is simple. It's not off-putting. It doesn't have any pain factor associated with it. So it means that we can meet the patient where they are. And increasingly, salivary diagnostics is also about at-home collections as well.
No, and it's got to be easy. I say people move to lesser pain. And so if we can make it lesser pain to swish a saline and spit it back in the bottle and get lots of information, then people are willing to do that. Through this journey, as I said, you've absolutely changed my practice. My patient population now is limited to physician referrals, people with these chronic inflammatory diseases that are related to the oral bacteria. Now, before we dive into that, I want to talk about the accuracy of your testing, because that's been a big area an epiphany for me. Because of my TED Talk, I get people sending me their new test all the time. And so what I'll do often, Ron, is do an Access Genetics test and then do the other test, whatever the new test is. And what I've found is such accuracy with your test. I mean, some of the other tests, I'm a clinician, not a biologist, but they have things show up that you know are not there, which can be a big fear factor for people, or they're not actually, you know, measuring enough. So I've tested your test against a lot of other testing, and I'm using yours because of your accuracy. How do people know what to look for when they're doing salivary testing?
Well, let me try to get to that more pointed question in a moment by setting the stage with a little bit of vocabulary. And at the risk of sounding a little bit technical, some of these words get jumbled. And so you use the word accuracy. In my parlance, accuracy means getting the right answer. I seek to measure Porphyromonas gingivalis. Do I find Porphyromonas gingivalis? So there's two aspects of that. The first is, given that it might be present in a person's mouth, how low do you need to go? In other words, what is the sensitivity? Now, some would argue, as a point of pride, maybe boastfulness, that I can measure zero or something, you know, close to nothingness. And I get that. I mean, we can employ all kinds of techniques to take the sensitivity test down to a level of absurdity, quite frankly. But the other part of the question is, what is clinically relevant? Okay, so sensitivity has two aspects of it. The ability in the laboratory to measure it, yes, no, I find it, it's present, and if I can't, I find another method to make it more sensitive. And then the second aspect of it is, what's clinically relevant? The second part of accuracy, if you will, involves what we call specificity. We know, for example, that of the 5 or 6, maybe up to 1,000 bacteria that reside in the oral cavity, and we look for a certain selection of those which we call pathogenic or disease-causing, there are limits to each of the laboratory tests in terms of finding specifically what you're looking for. Porphyromonas gingivalis, again, as an example, has a series of subspecies, And within the genome of those organisms, there are DNA sequences that are different, which would cause a test to erroneously pick something up that is not P. gingivalis, or on the other hand, pick up the wrong strain, if you will. So part of the question that a clinician, I hope, is asking the laboratory is, please describe your specificity. And we then, in turn, want to provide good customer service, and we'll tell them. We'll share our validation data and all the information that we have. But lastly, I just want to point out, as a clinical laboratory, just like you're extremely experienced and practiced, and that's why you call it a profession, we are too part of the professional caregiving team. And so our credentials, the types of quality management that we employ in our laboratory should all be very public to you and to your patients. Ask us about our proficiency testing. Ask us about our laboratory exchanges so that you know that we get 100% on those tests, which are blinded and so on. So all those things go into the practical distillation of what you want to call accuracy, getting the right answer.
No, I appreciate that. When we met initially, I was doing some training at Mayo Clinic and came over to see your lab, and I felt like I was in a spaceship. It was amazing. That was probably, I'm thinking, Ron, maybe 2013 or 14. But the point is, it has to be clinically relevant. I agree. If we find a bunch of things on a test, but it doesn't matter, then who cares? We're wasting our time and money. But from my point of view, as a clinician, I'm seeing enhanced outcomes for the physicians that send their patients. We have, the joke is that I've gotten 5 women pregnant because we've dealt with their oral microbes. This affects everybody from head to toe. You mentioned Porphyromonas gingivalis, and I think initially when your testing came out, I looked at those big bacteria. For our listeners, that's called PG, and there was a big study in 2012 that came out talking about showing that it was in about, 40%, Ron, of brains postmortem, the DNA of this particular bacteria. So in real time, I see that when we clean PG up, which means cleaning other bacteria up, then we see people get more cognitively functioning. I mean, we see it in real time. So what, as the research has progressed, you've been on the forefront, you've published over 70 scientific papers. And what has surprised you the most about the systemic connection? Because for listeners, this is not about teeth. We're not talking about teeth today. And we're talking about the rest of the body outside of the mouth. And I'm always shocked that early gum disease had such a big impact. But what are you seeing that's shocking you?
Well, I'm going to surprise you a little bit with my answer and tell you sort of the punchline, which is I'm surprised that there hasn't been more of an outcry by the dental profession and even by the physician community to sort of bring that and say, please explain to me. So here's the metaphor that I use for what you describe as the mouth-body connection. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. I describe it as an encyclopedia without an index. Why do I say that? Because logically, almost, I guess, sort of obviously, there are many, many associations of the bacteria, the infections, and the ensuing inflammation that arises in the mouth, and the consequence of organ systems outside of the mouth. You started with one example. Let's leave that for the end. The first and obvious example is the association of oral bacteria and inflammation in the mouth making cardiovascular disease worse. I'm not here to say that it is the cause. I am here to say that it is a cause, okay? And so the forward-thinking practitioner takes into consideration those things that physicians typically or conventionally have focused on, lipids and lipid disorders, And now we combine that with the knowledge of inflammation, the preeminent source of which arises in the mouth. Bringing those two elements together gives us a much heightened understanding of cardiovascular disease. I'll cite another example in this encyclopedia, another chapter, neurodegeneration, dementias. So indeed, it was the dentists and the dental profession that first observed that patients with periodontal disease often had a higher incidence of cognitive decline. The obverse of that is that when you take care of your periodontium, you show improvements in your cognition. So taking that observation, it was a very brilliant discovery that P. gingivalis puts forth a series of biologic effects locally and systemically that in fact lead to a cause, not the cause, of Alzheimer's disease, as an example. And you point out that when we look at autopsies, patients who have dementia, Alzheimer's-like dementia, actually have small foci of infection by P. gingivalis deep in the brain. So let's stop for a moment and ask the question, well, how did it get there? Okay? I often describe the body as sort of a plumbing experiment. We've got the inside and the outside, and there's always a risk that the outside can get to the inside. And that's what happens when the mouth becomes inflamed. The bacteria, which are resident in the mouth, can leach into the systemic circulation. Just follow it in your mind's eye. It goes from the capillaries that make up the gum tissue, then to the heart, then goes out the arteries, and now it's broadcast to every organ in the body. What we recently learned is that the uniqueness of the vascular system in the brain now can be breached by P. gingivalis, which can cross what's called the blood-brain barrier, and there it takes up residence in the deep interstices of the brain, and over 20 or 30 years, it causes the change in these neurons, which are Alzheimer's disease. Now, here's the good news, and we are blessed to use the word, to be part of a forthcoming clinical trial. This is actually the sequela to an earlier clinical trial testing drugs directed against P. gingivalis. And our test, now evaluated by the FDA, will be used to measure, firstly, patients who are going to be recruited into the study, and then to use the same test to follow what is the effect of this drug in those who are treated versus the control group. The hope is we will have another class of medications that come out of this that are centered around the mouth-body connection. So let's go back to what I said. The encyclopedia without the index. I just gave you an index. I just said P. gingivalis going to the brain sets up a site of infection. That's the biology. Now we've come in with a new drug a few years from this point in time, and now that chapter in the encyclopedia is written.
Well, and when we couple that with dedicated dental professionals who are going to, you know, teach people how to keep their mouth clean, I mean, that's just going to enhance the outcomes even more. I think, Ron, there can never be just a pill. It has to, you know, it has to be everything. And I want to emphasize, I so appreciate you saying that you're shocked that the medical profession has not picked this up. You're shocked the dental profession. Oh my goodness, that's exactly why this podcast exists. This is not a dental podcast for my listeners. This is all about vitality. But the area of the oral microbiome or the microbiome period from stem to stern, you know, the mouth is really just the first part of the gut. If we forget it, we're missing a huge chunk of all this chronic inflammatory disease that we're experiencing. And I am absolutely stunned that more and more and more doctors. So I just, you know, implore you listeners to talk to your physicians, talk to your dentist, tell them to go to the Access Genetics website and sign up. I mean, you know, email me, I'll help you sign up, because the outcomes we see Ron, are nothing less than spectacular. For example, back about the time I met you, it was 2013, actually, a physician referred a patient who had a C-reactive protein of 18.1. So for listeners, that's a measure of inflammation in the body. Don't know where it's coming from, but we know there's, you know, a good 30,000 miles of blood vessels, capillaries. And so those can be inflamed when this number's high. It increases your chances of stroke and heart attack significantly. Well, Ron, we did a saliva test. And one thing that's so great about your saliva test is that people can see it. So it's not like, ooh, I think you have inflammation. You know, I think there's a problem in your mouth. So this patient could see her blood test from the physician. And then she saw the pathogens there. She did not have a high level of oral pathogens. I mean, not, you know, when you think it has to be a whole lot. No, it can be a little bit. It just depends on the person. We cleaned her up, no antibiotics, did what's called scalene root planning, used a laser. 3 months from the day of her periodontal therapy, and we used some oral probiotics. 3 months later, her C-reactive protein had plummeted to 2.9. Nothing else had been done except just treating this oral microbiome that Dr. McGlennon has allowed us to do. And so what was fascinating, though, Ron, is that not only did C-reactive protein drop, her lipids improved, her blood sugar improved, everything on her blood test moved to a more favorable area. That's what ignited me to start my whole functional medicine training, because it was so huge. And people, even in the functional medicine world, people still need to understand that this mouth, this forgotten orifice, is key. You can't get well. If your mouth is not healthy, you can't get well.
Well, I at the risk of sounding a little bit too, you know, pedagogical about this, the metaphor of the encyclopedia being the mouth-body connection is stitched together with the subtext that you just described, namely the role of inflammation that sort of ties what goes on in the mouth and all of these systemic disorders. And so C-reactive protein is a laboratory test heretofore, you know, used almost exclusively by the physician community with a focus on, you know, where is the inflammation coming from? Okay. And you aptly described it as it's elevated. Start looking for the source of that inflammation. So one little jewel of knowledge that we take home with us is that the mouth is a source of chronic smoldering and sometimes episodically exaggerated inflammation. It's always there, pumping out inflammation, and hence it's affecting our heart, our gut, our brain. The bacteria also go along for the ride, so they contribute to that discussion. But I think what you've described there is that when you change the health of the mouth, you lower local and systemic inflammation, and hence, you turn down the temperature on all of these other incipient or underlying diseases that, quite frankly, are the cost of medicine in this country and around the world today. We're talking about chronic diseases, many of which can be much better managed if we add to the recipe, not just the management of lipids, but the management of inflammation. Not just the use of crossword puzzles to keep our brain sharp, but to lower inflammation. Not just the effects of our improved diet, but to lower our inflammation. So this, again, becomes kind of the mortar between these conceptual bricks.
It's so exciting. I'll tell you a real life story. This woman came in, referred by a physician, due to early onset memory loss. And her husband brought her. She couldn't drive. She had high porphyromonas gingivalis, PG. She had also, on this testing, folks, there's what are called red complex bacteria. So they all kind of work together. You know, it's like you get one bad kid in the class and they all make everybody else misbehave if there's enough peer pressure. So we, with her, we did use antibiotics. We did the periodontal oral systemic therapy is what I call it. It's a scalene root planning using a laser. But Ron, about 2 months later, I mean, pretty soon, we're just at work and she sticks her head in and she's like, "Debbie, I'm back. I drove myself. I just came to give you a hug." I mean, you know, she was doing other things. Like, as you emphasized earlier, it's not one thing. These are chronic inflammatory diseases. It's not like getting tuberculosis and there's a single cause. It's a whole lot of different factors. So we're not really worried about cause. We're worried about thinking about, okay, what is contributing to this that we can control? And with the mouth, I mean, that's the easy orifice to reach. Right, Ron? I mean,
indeed.
Simple.
Indeed. And so our mission, to go back to the early part of this discussion, has been to start applying these tests, which can be put onto a report and held up to the patient, held up to the clinician, and say, this is a value. Now, this is what we're going to be working on. So let's go back to your earlier question about physicians and dentists not really communicating about this mouth-body connection, a topic which to you and me is very obvious and critically important. You'd be surprised at the number of times we've received consultation here at the laboratory, which we, by the way, very much welcome. This is as important to us as producing a result, is taking a telephone call or a Zoom call and sitting down and saying, how do I communicate to my local dentist? How do I communicate with my local physician? And I'm very pleased to say that sometimes the laboratory report is that common language between two groups of specialists. And from there, the conversations ensue. And from the locality of a dentist practicing and now sending patients in referral to a cardiologist, the reciprocal will start to occur and better health is the result. So let's agree that using the laboratory to say these are the objective, accurate, you know, obviously visual results pertaining to my patient, we can now start a larger conversation that addresses the mouth-body connection.
Yes, and I'm actually working on a book to put all these case histories in, because I think it gives people hope, because they're so many of these diseases, they just sort of think they're going to get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, and it doesn't have to be that way at all. Tell us about your research on Fusobacterium nucleatum. So listeners, you know, I love this. I love to talk about Fusobacterium. I call it, Ron, the mother-in-law bacteria. Because when it's at low levels, it's helpful, you know. So I'm a mother-in-law. If I go in and, you know, do a few dishes and leave, that's all good. It's when I stay and give unsolicited advice and move things around and, you know, take over that I become a problem. And I think Fusobacterium is very much like that. Initially, Ron, I ignored Fuso because, you know, I just looked at those red bad ones. But now I'm realizing that it is a bacteria that, now I pay a lot of attention to it and see excellent clinical outcomes when we deal with it. What are you finding in your research about the old mother-in-law here?
Well, I love that imagery there. I love my mother-in-law, though, so I don't know that there's any negative connotation associated with it. But
well, I love mine, too, but I didn't want her to live with us and, you know, I didn't want her to be attached to my hip. So I think that does make sense with Fuso, because it is good when it's at the right level.
Well, my study of Fusobacterium nucleatum, or FN for short, I think has been a big part of my education, both in how I have gained perspective on the oral microbiome, and actually has caused me to turn to the more, I guess, deliberate work of experts in the field of microbiology. What you describe in the mother-in-law bacteria is what we call a commensal. And the vocabulary is that when we talk about a pathogen, that means its presence always does bad. A symbiote means that it lives with us and actually imparts mutual benefit to the host. A commensal sometimes is more Switzerland. It's kind of in between. It's not doing harm at any particular level, except when your body changes, when you have moments of stress, when you're pregnant, when hence your physiology changes, when you contract type 2 diabetes, or you have other types of chronic illnesses and infirmities, you will find changes in the level of this bacteria, which a few years earlier in your life weren't causing harm. Now, this commensal becomes pathogenic. At that point, quite frankly, we're talking about a mathematical sort of relationship. The more bacteria, the more time, the more likely is the chance that that bacteria will go from the mouth to someplace else in the body. The classic example we cite in pregnancy-associated gingivitis, which I will say is in contrast to chronic periodontitis occurring in a young woman who happens to be pregnant, is the concern that Fusobacterium nucleatum will go through the circulation, take up residence in the placenta, and will lead to fetal compromise. Mm-hmm. And that has been reported in the literature and is a concern. And when you say you've helped people become pregnant, it probably has something to do with lowering that level.
Yeah.
But let me add that because of our thinking about FN, we have started to look for it in unique places. And I know that you have a particular curiosity about the relationship between this bacteria and a new type of colorectal carcinoma. For your audience, I put it in very mechanical terms. Colorectal cancer is an epidemic. It has to do with longevity, it has to do with diet, it has to do with carcinogens. But in my fairly long career, I have never heard of an example of a bacteria so tightly associated with causing a normal cell to become a malignant cell. And the story that can be told is that if you look at a certain location of colorectal cancer, you can find in some cases this bacteria sort of burrowing into the cell. And when that tumor becomes metastatic and goes to a lymph node, the bacteria goes along for the ride. And curiously, the effect of that bacteria on the response to therapy is promulgated by use of antibiotics, which kill the bacteria and then make that cancer cell more responsive to the types of chemo drugs that are available in the care of these patients. So again, another chapter in this encyclopedia we talk about, but out of this has spilled some very unique biology that 10 years ago, we would have only imagined, if not hard to believe.
No, absolutely. And Ron, I saw that in real time, a patient with colorectal cancer who actually had a pump with 5-fluorouracil, and it was not working. And so once we treated the fuso in his mouth and he took an antibiotic, which was metronidazole, his chemo started working. So for our listeners, I really appreciate you bringing this up, Ron, because for our listeners, it's important to be tested in 100% of the cases I've seen. Now, that's my own clinical practice. I see high Fusobacterium on via the Access Genetics test, my periopath, and I see it at higher than optimal levels in the gut. In this particular gentleman's case, this was a few years ago. So I started researching, you know, why has his chemo not working, and found the research that you mentioned, Ron, that shows that Fusobacterium can render cancer cells resistant to certain types of chemotherapy. So in the research I've seen, and please add to this because you're the brains here. It renders cancer cells resistant to 5-fluorouracil as well as cisplatin, and there may be others. But we saw that, initially. I've seen it since in several cases. But the first time that I saw that actually happen, literally, I was nothing short of astounded because this man was really given, you know, no hope, and that gave him hope.
Well, we need to share that story over and over again, and it's more than sort of cocktail party discussion. I do want to add, however, something that has been put upon me over the years in this discussion about Fusobacteria nucleatum, and quite frankly, what you see in each of the test reports you order for your patients. We need some perspective. You pointed out that FN is present in almost every person that you see, so we can extrapolate to imagine that it's probably present in almost all of us. So it is not necessarily unto itself a universal bad actor. So we don't want patients, you know, losing control over the perspective, which is, I have some level of this, get rid of it. In fact, I have challenged the dental profession to present to me a consensus protocol or some approach towards what they think to be the best way to treat and lower FN levels. And it's been met kind of with deafening silence. So we can measure it and we find it, but let's not come to the conclusion that we need to eradicate it, because that's probably not practical. But what we should be paying attention to is that when there is a baseline level, when you see otherwise a healthy mouth, and it changes in the upward direction, start thinking about other things going on in that patient's life. That's the temperature read that this kind of a test can point out to the observant clinician.
No, and you're right, the observant clinician, because the assessment of any inflammation in the gums has to be primary. Now, I'm seeing sick people. Now, my practice is, you know, limited to physician referrals. I no longer do restorative dentistry, and haven't for I guess about 5 years. But the thing is, Ron, in the dental profession, this is basic. This is dental hygiene 101. I mean, in 1981, when I started dental school, you know, we talked about inflamed gums and we talked about bleeding, and dentistry from my perspective has gotten to be more carpentry rather than actually medicine. And you know, you've brought medicine into dentistry, and but we still need to use the initial modes of diagnosing gingival, you know, any oral microbiome problems with things like bleeding, like what's called, you know, comprehensive periodontal exam. Now, that's something we learned in 1981, but I can't tell you how many patients I see that have never had a comprehensive periodontal exam. They say, no, show me what you're doing. But, you know, and so that has to be part of the equation. It's not just testing. I would venture to say, though, Ron, people that that are looking to, they're using your test, and that are reading your website, which is loaded with great information, are probably also doing a comprehensive periodontal exam. Yeah, you don't want someone to just get tested and think, oh, I have take antibiotics. No, it's all about home care, and pretty simple home care. I mean, it's shocked me that even early levels of inflammation are affecting the body.
Well, thank you very much. That testimonial, it couldn't be more apt for something I frankly have never forgotten. You know, going through a career in pathology, you might think that I want to surround myself with big instruments and, you know, kind of sterilized looking laboratories, but I haven't forgot the importance of the most key element in the mouth-body connection, and that's taking a good history. And what I mean by that is, if you ask the question, listen for the answer. A simple, have you changed any medications, and then you just rotely write it down, has to be followed on with, oh, so now you're taking metformin? Well, tell me about how long has it been since you were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes? Because that will tell you what to start looking for in your clinical exam. And then it becomes an openness to and a willingness to take in a laboratory result. Let me tell you the most frequent consult that I get in the laboratory. And that is, your test is wrong. These bacterial levels are not what I am seeing. And I will say, well, you know, your test was part of another 100 tests and the other 99 were fine. So is it possible that it's not the diagnosis that you're contemplating? Maybe the inflammation in those gums is caused by another source and the bacterial levels hence do not reflect it. So we look at diagnoses through the laboratory lens as ruling things in, but we also can rule things out. So to borrow from my own interest in woodworking, if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. That shouldn't be the case in the way we practice medicine.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it comes down to relationship. It's got to be a relationship. You've got to have a hopefully physician and dental team that knows you and that will take time to ask these questions and not just, you know, rush you through. I think the key for listeners is to find a dental hygienist who really is somebody who will talk to you, explain things. I think that's going to be our mode of getting the salivary diagnostics into offices and people being tested like they need to be. Because I don't know, I just think dental hygienists they're really the most important seat in the house.
You're more qualified to answer that, but I agree. And that's where we see our growth. But to say it in another way, that's also the place where you find empathy best expressed. So right. If you listen to patients, you'll see then, let's take a test to find out if what you're telling me actually is confirmed by the laboratory, because I'm seeing this. You bring those three elements together, and all of a sudden you have a much more powerful command over what you're diagnosing and your management plan and hence outcomes.
It correlates with severity of any viruses. I mean, what's happening in your mouth is just affecting everything. I see it so correlated, Ron, with brain fog. Now there are not studies yet in this area, but we see it in real time. So, you know, I would just implore people to ask their dental hygienist about it. Tell them to go onto your website and glean education and, you know, have a Zoom meeting, and it will just make, for any dentist listening, it'll just make your practice so much more exciting.
Well, and respectfully, we understand that most practicing dentists were not introduced in their studies to what the laboratory does for them. It's dentistry is a much more insular profession that says, these are the tools you need to carry out these procedures and so on, and you should be self-sustaining. The modern practice of medicine is a community. You have lots of specialists and lots of contributions, radiology, laboratory, counselors, and so on. All of those should be welcome into the practice because that will give you a much more holistic solution.
Yeah, that's what people have to look for. But I think it starts with informed patients who know what to look for and are discerning about their health care. Because as you said, you know, when the environment changes, say for Fusobacterium, when people are nutrient depleted, Fusobacterium grows. When people are stressed, Fusobacterium grows. You know, so it's not just the mouth or oral hygiene. It's this whole system. And just too often, medicine gets siloed and we try to separate the body out, and it's just not the way.
That's right. That's right.
So your lab has other testing. Tell us some other popular tests and what you have on the horizon.
For decades now, I have been a proponent of the value of looking for risk of oral cancer through the study of human papillomavirus. And if there was a better example of the importance of taking a history and, quite frankly, having the courage to ask patients, are you concerned? Do you practice oral sex? If so, you know, would you like to have a test that can tell you if you are at risk for the development of an oral cancer? Let's just talk about the demographics alone. It's three times more common than cervical cancer. Today, oral cancer is not the, quote, old man smoking drinking disease. It is a patient presenting in their third or fourth decade of life who has none of those other risk factors, but may have in their earlier part of their life partook in oral sex, for example. So that's where it comes from. You have to test to know it. And if you find it, then you can lay forth a very intelligent plan for avoiding it to develop into something more severe. So the dentist becomes the dental office becomes the central place where that question can be addressed. And yet, many decades into my career, we do not have much activity in that test. We're looking now in our laboratory to go beyond the world of molecular genetics, which is mostly focused on DNA and RNA, to now include what we can do with the components of saliva. So we've introduced into our laboratory a chemistry laboratory. And I say chemistry for the physician community who routinely measures sodium, potassium, and different blood cells and so on. That's routine and regular in the physician practice. Well, to bring that technology into the testing of saliva is starting to do exactly what we've been discussing today. Tease apart the concept of gum disease from that which is causal, the bacteria, to what is the effect, inflammation. So if there's any doubters amongst us, you test with the MyPerioPath test to find out what is the signature of bacteria that causes this polymicrobial infection. That's the cause. But a good clinician will know that chronic periodontitis is noted by rises and falls. It has flare-ups and recessions, right? So the central question then becomes, what is the level of inflammation? Now we can bring in new tests that actually measure that inflammation. Now, what's really fun about this is that in the study of these inflammatory biomarkers in saliva, we start to get insights about what's going on in the systemic circulation. Let me give you a simple illustration. If I have a biomarker, such as interleukin-6, that's elevated in the mouth, that confirms your diagnosis that the patient has a flare-up of chronic periodontitis. Should you stop there? No, because in that same test, we can measure the blood level of interleukin-6. Now, if it is elevated, you should be thinking about a systemic source of inflammation that is contributing also to the oral. Maybe they have rheumatoid arthritis. Maybe they're just responding to a COVID infection. If by contrast, that level is flat or negative or low, then you know that the inflammation is localized to the mouth. So it becomes kind of a puzzle that suddenly the mouth-body connection is very tightly connected and the practicing dentist has much more interesting stuff to deal with.
Exactly. Yesterday, I was referred a patient from a physician who utilizes your test and tested interleukin-6. This particular patient's headed to get a hip replacement in 6 weeks. So the test showed high interleukin-6, as well as several of the different oral pathogens that we've talked about. So the goal is I'm pushing my schedule around to get her treated before she goes in for her hip replacement. So these things really impact outcomes and post-surgical infection. And, you know, from that standpoint, Ron, I mean, you are reaching into history. You know, somebody goes in for a joint replacement and it's success versus failure. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, without a doubt. Yes. And imagine the inverse of that. A cardiac surgeon, for example, you know, working in an infected field and going into the operating suite without actually knowing, is everything cleaned up? So now that we know that the mouth is, in fact, directly and indirectly connected to the heart, as an example, we should strive to clean up the mouth to the best that we can, because we will have better outcomes in the hip, in the heart, in the brain, and so on.
I really think it's there first. I think it's really not about the teeth. The teeth are the last to go. Now, it's going to help the teeth, of course, but the point that I talk to people about is their systemic health. In fact, Ron, I was in a class Sunday, a gut health class, and an excellent instructor who talked about periodontal disease, but shows this mouth on the screen that had literally like, you know, pus coming out of the gums and the teeth were all rotten. And, you know, that's not what we see. We see people that 20 years ago, I would have dismissed as you look great. You know, in dentistry, if your dentist tells you folks, oh, you have a little bleeding, no problem. No, it is a problem. It is a problem. It's exactly what Dr. McGlennon and I have been talking about today. It is impacting all the rest of your body. Your teeth are not going to fall out, but the rest of your body is suffering.
And by bringing in these very sensitive laboratory tools, you are invoking what we call the molecular X-ray. It's enhancing your ability to see that below the level that your clinical exam would ever be able to do.
That is a genius term. I've never heard that. Molecular X-ray without any radiation. It's a lot simpler.
Without any radiation. That's exactly right.
That is so fantastic. Well, anything else you want to share with us? I know you've been so generous with your time today.
Well, I just want to acknowledge the fact that, you know, we can't do this without an excellent team around me, but Access Genetics, you know, in its name and what has given rise to what we call oral DNA labs, really is about access. It's about the combination of providing a tangible product, a laboratory test report, but it's wrapped in a service that provides perspective and counsel. And again, through a community, we can give patients better health. So my experience and my voice, along with my colleagues, can give a lot to the practitioner in terms of where the laboratory fits into the way they practice. Mm-hmm. So note that we are committed to that as part of our business model.
No, and you have done it so well through the years. I've been with you since 2010. And
yes.
There's a lot of people trying to get into this space, but folks, I'm staying with Access Genetics because for my clinical practice, that has absolutely been trustworthy for me. Well, Ron, I thank you. I'll put some of those links in the show notes, and I thank you for your time and your commitment to quality and to research. And listeners, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for being part of Vitality Made Simple. It's because of you that the podcast is growing. We're now in 122 countries and almost 4,000 cities. So that's because of you. And I invite you to join me on Instagram. I'm sort of newly there, but having lots of fun. It's not just about teeth on Instagram, folks. It's about full body health. It's about vitality, having more energy to enjoy your life and to increase your vitality span. So thanks again. Blessings until next time.